Welcome. This is our first Zoom for our clients at the Center for Health, Learning, and Achievement. I'm Dr. Alicia Braccia, and I have Adrian Quivito with me. And we are going to be talking about ADHD and the brain today. We've had a lot of calls, especially over the quarantine, because parents are with their children all the time. And so we've had a lot of calls with questions about attention deficit disorder and what it is and how it's treated. And so we thought it would be a good idea to just do kind of a video presentation for our clients. So we do a lot of evaluations with children for ADHD and young adults. And as part of the evaluation, we do some neuropsych testing, some psychoeducational testing that really looks at attention and how well the individual can not just sustain attention, but selectively attend to detail, to be able to inhibit impulses, to be able to shift from thing to thing. And this helps children be efficient learners. And when they can't do it, whether that's at home and or at school, and as we're working with them, it is indicative of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which has three subtypes. There's an inattentive presentation, a hyperactive impulsive presentation, and there's a combined presentation. So a lot of things can make a child look like they have ADHD and they don't. If there's a poor sleep habits, if there's any kind of trauma or anxiety, food dysregulation, if there's any kind of issues within the home or grief, or even learning disabilities, a child can look like they have an attention deficit disorder and they may not. So it's really important to not just go off of symptom checklists and look more deeply at the brain and what ADHD is in the brain. So Adrian's going to just click on to the next screen and we're going to look at, this is a SPECT scan. And this is a typical brain looking from underneath. And so at the top of the screen is kind of the frontal lobe, and at the bottom of the screen is the back of the brain, looking from underneath. So ADHD is a neurochemical problem. It's a lack of absorption of neurochemicals, that dopamine and norepinephrine have been two neurochemicals that have been associated with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And so our assessments really look at and test the child's ability to do that and compares them against other children their age. So it's a developmental perspective. On the next screen is a brain that is at rest on the left-hand side. So this is an ADHD brain at rest. And you can see those holes that are kind of in that frontal lobe. Those are not real holes. That's a lack of absorption of neurochemicals that assist with being able to pay attention, self-monitoring, inhibiting impulses. On the right side of the screen, this is that same brain under concentration. So you can see that those holes have widened, and there's actually also holes in the center of the brain, that arousal mechanism. And that's, again, a lack of absorption of neurochemicals that are responsible for being able to pay attention. So you can see their brain when they're being asked to pay attention to schoolwork or homework or things that are external demands that they don't really necessarily enjoy, their brain is actually betraying them and shutting down. Now imagine how frustrating that is. So our assessments pick that up, but we also use an assessment called a quantitative EEG, where we hook a child up to an electroencephalogram, and we can actually read their brainwave activity to see if there's dysregulation. So on the next screen is an example of a brain map that we have done. And actually, Adrian, just talk a little bit about how you do the brain, the QEEG, and then the interpretation of that. And then I can kind of talk about how we can weave our assessment into that.
Perfect. Yep, I can do that. So first of all, thanks for having me and everyone that's going to get to see us is going to learn quite a lot about ADD and ADHD and the brain and how it works. So the brain maps are done in a quiet office setting where we use a cap that has 19 sensors built into it. And the sensors basically just listen. They listen to brain waves, a lot like an EKG when you go get one done. They put sensors and they listen to the electrical impulses of the heart when it beats. This is listening to the impulses that the brain uses to fire and to communicate, both on on literally cell-to-cell communication, but also globally, which is all the entire networks. And then once we collect the data, we typically do it with eyes open and eyes closed, depending on someone can do the eyes closed. And then after we collect the data, we run it through a database system that provides us with a very detailed report. For the purposes of this presentation, we're going to go over just one of the metrics, which is the magnitude, which is here demonstrating where the power is. So the examples I like to give people on how to interpret this is that if each one of these names, so we have delta, theta, alpha, beta, and high beta, if these were all radio stations, and then you have, this is the obviously the head, and you can see the brain in the background there. This is the inverse of what we showed on the first couple slides. This is looking at the head from the top down. So this is the nose up here, and these are the ears, and we're looking at it from the top down. You can see that there's corresponding colors of intensity. So green would be okay, red is high, and yellow is very high. So what I tell people typically is, this is a radio station, this is a radio station, and all these little bubbles here with the number letter combinations are speakers. And if you look, you can see that this particular radio station is playing the music a lot louder than the ones over here. So this one's okay volume, this one's a little bit low, this one starts to pick up a little bit high. This is even higher, you see it starts to focalize and kind of gather a little bit more here. And then you see that it's really high over here. From the perspective of QEEG and neurofeedback and brain mapping, delta is predominantly a frequency that we see in the brain when we have what we call inhibition or slowing. And that slowing and inhibition really to kind of touch on what's happening with in the scans that we saw before. This slowing really lowers the metabolism and the amount of uptake that happens in the brain of these neurochemicals that Dr. Bradshaw was talking about. So this is a great representation of what you see in ADD kids, because these two frequencies are slower frequencies, and then you have the very fast frequencies on this end.
And so when we are doing an assessment for ADHD with our tests, we are seeing on our assessments and in the rating scales that the child is having difficulty paying attention, sustaining focus, or shifting attention, or inhibiting impulses. But we can also add a quantitative EEG and actually see the brain's communication is slower, and it's taking longer for information to get to those areas, which is causing that inattention where they may just kind of tune out or zone out, or they may just jump into something without really stopping and thinking because that front part of their brain is not online. So what we can do is we can then say, all right, let's train the brain to be able to get online faster and easier and reduce some of that slowing in those delta and theta waves. And it's through a cognitive training. So it's a very kind of natural way that our brain learns. That's what makes us human. And neurofeedback is a technique that can help do that. So if you look at the maybe the next screen, Adrian, where this is just another screen where we change the magnitude where this student specifically had a lot of slow wave activity in the frontal lobes, and he was diagnosed with ADHD. So what we recommended was, in addition to obviously seeing the medical doctor and talking about other approaches like medication, that this may also be an alternative by doing neurofeedback through neurologics. So on the next screen, Adrian, just this is kind of talk a little bit about the neurologics intervention.
Right. So basically the way that the neurologics neurofeedback works is once we've identified the areas that are producing too much or not enough of any frequency, in this case, we're talking about ADD, we'll place sensors in the areas that we're going to be training. And then what we do is we have a computer that is monitoring the brain waves, and we have a different monitor that is presenting something on the screen. So in this case, this person is playing Pac-Man. And so when the brain waves are produced in a more pro-attentive state, then the Pac-Man will move in and around the screen. And when the brain drifts off and becomes inattentive or distracted, then the Pac-Man will slow down. And this is what we call operant conditioning. And the perfect example I give people about operant conditioning is that we've all been conditioned by the car companies to put on our seatbelts. And the way that they do that is if you get into the car and you drive off without putting on your seatbelt, the car will start dinging at you. That dinging is considered a negative stimulus. And in order to avoid that, what we do is we get into the car and we buckle our seatbelts so we never have to hear the dinging. So when the brain is presented with an adverse or negative stimulus, in this case, stopping the Pac-Man, then the brain tries to avoid that by producing only the right patterns in the brain, and then it gets the Pac-Man to move. It just so happens that those brain waves that we're trying to get the Pac-Man to move with are the pro-attentive brain waves that cause learning and training and sustainability. A big question I get asked, about neurofeedback is, once you're done, does it stay or do you have to keep coming back? And the answer is that all of the long-term studies that we're seeing show that even 6, 8, 10 years out, that the brain, once it learns a new behavior, like producing a pattern, it doesn't tend to forget it. And if you imagine kind of like the old saying, it's like learning how to ride a bike, it's like you always remember how to do that, even though if you don't ride a bike for many, many years, it just becomes, we'll say automatic. But unless the brain learns how to control these patterns, it produces them, and then it shifts the dynamic of the brain waves to stay there for a longer period of time. So the benefits are obviously that it's fun. Most of the kids, when we do the neurofeedback, they're watching a Netflix or they're watching Disney or something on this monitor here through a browser. And the adverse stimulus that we produce is a darkened screen. So when the person drifts off and gets distracted, the screen will get darker and they can't really watch the show as well as if they were really focused and attentive, and then the brightness comes back. So over time, the brain learns how to control the brightness on the screen, and that's how we kind of get the same effect as doing video games or other things. So we have a lot of fun things that we can do with the kids, and they genuinely tend to like coming to do their sessions. And specifically now with the landscape of how things are, we do have an in-home option that we can do. So training basically requires for us to send the system out to the household, and we do all the training on how to put the sensors on remotely. And you get to do the sessions at home. And even if you decide to come into the office or you have, want to come to the office, the consideration is time, gas, and travel and money and all the things that go with having to come to an office a couple times a week. So the in-home program works out pretty well.
And we've had many of our families participate in it and have really found, that the children have made wonderful gains. Nothing is a magic bullet. Medication No. is not a magic bullet. Neurofeedback is not a magic bullet, but it does help facilitate sustaining focus, inhibiting impulses, it reduces hyperactivity. It also helps with anxiety and self-regulation of emotion. And we found some really positive effects using this technique. So we're really excited about being able to offer this. We've offered it for several years now. I used to do it myself many years ago. And Adrian is excellent with families. So you know, if anybody's interested in finding out more information about our ADHD assessment or neurofeedback, you're welcome to give the office a call. But this is hopefully the first in many of our live Zooms on our website and on our Facebook. You can find us. So thanks so much, Adrian, for joining us.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add real quick that you know, the reason we're doing this is because we have found out that doing this with a multimodal approach, which is looking at interventions and looking at assessments from the get-go, really gives families that that sense of understanding that this is what finally somebody is explaining what's going on with my child. And so at the very least, what I tell people is that if you're not ready to jump into doing the neurofeedback program right away, consider doing the brain map, because the brain map provides us with a lot of information that really matches up very well with Dr. Bracci's assessments. And it's a really good validative tool to look at objective data that we're collecting that we're not asking, you know, the participant to give us responses to. The brain just tells us.
Yeah, so I think the parents really like it because they see it.
Yeah.
It's not just describing symptoms, they see it. And this is, you know, ADHD, it is a neurological condition. And so when they see it, they're like, oh, okay, they're not just being lazy, or they're not just.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many parents, after they see the brain maps and the assessments, there's a short-lived period of guilt that they have, because they realize that they've been really hardened thinking that their child is just making bad choices. And a lot of times it's, you know, if you don't have the right tools in the toolbox, you can't build it. So we tell families that, you know, don't be hard on yourself, because obviously life goes on and things can get frustrating at home. But at the same time, like, understanding and seeing that this is something that is real and we can visualize it. And then you have something like neurofeedback and other modalities, you know, looking at neurotransmitters and looking at, you know, other things that that are beneficial to helping the nervous system calm down and be able to focus again. I think it's just a win-win across the board. And the first steps are getting evaluations and looking at the brain maps. And then, you know, as a team, Dr. Bracci and I will sit and talk about each case and decide whether neurofeedback is appropriate. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not.
Yeah, sometimes we do not recommend it. But again, there's a reason for that. And the brain map really shows us why we're not recommending it and recommending something else.
Correct. Yep. So, Dr. Bracci, thanks again for your time. I look forward to doing more of these. So if anyone has requests for different things, if anyone's interested in everything from anxiety to learning disorders, memory problems, speech, language processing, the brain map can really peel back the onion to the core, and we can take a look at it and go into a little bit more detail. So we'll let the viewers kind of drive the conversation as we go.
Yeah,
forward.
We were talking about maybe the next time talking about the brain maps and how it relates to the reading in the brain and math in the brain. So hopefully this will be one of many series.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks again so much, Dr. Braccio, and we look forward to hearing from everyone.
Okay. Be safe, everyone.